You're listening to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, your escape to reality.
Hello and welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Today is Wednesday, December 18th, 2024, and this is your host, Stephen Novella. Joining me this week are Bob Novella.
Hey, everybody.
Kara Santa Maria.
Howdy.
Jay Novella.
Hey, guys.
Evan Bernstein.
Good evening, everyone.
And Ian Callanan. Ian, welcome back on the show, man.
Huh? Oh, hey, sorry, I didn't hear you. I'm flying my drones back and forth between New Jersey and Connecticut.
Who are you?
Anyone with half a brain knows it's you, Ian.
Yeah, I knew it.
Certainly this audience knows.
They love it. The people love it in New Jersey, actually.
There's a bunch of fun stuff happening right at like the last end of the year.
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm.
We're not really doing new news items, but we have to say the drone thing is just so silly.
I know.
I mean, it's basically like people are wondering what these mysterious drones are in the sky. They're freaking drones. Uh-huh. What is mysterious about
and
this, it?
And other things that are misidentified as drones.
Yeah. What do you think these drones are? I think they're drones.
But they're drones at night. People can't possibly fly.
And there's a lot of them. Where would people get so many drones?
Yeah. They always come out at night.
Definitely not Amazon.
Unless it's the day.
I got mine. I did order one on Cyber Monday. Yes.
Oh.
Yes, I did a search for the best deal on a drone, and I got one like at 85% off. And I bought
it. Whoa, nice.
Have
you got it yet?
I have,
yes. Have you flown it yet?
No, I haven't. I have to wait until the holidays are over until, you know, got to open it.
Is there a brand associated with it that you're willing to say?
Well, I don't have the box right in front of me. I would have to go get it. But I believe the designation is called X29. I don't know if that means anything.
Okay. No.
No.
Okay.
Maybe I'll look it up.
Maybe I can look that up real quick while you guys keep droning on. You knew that awful pun was coming.
Who cares? I can use it.
Thank you.
Is the year over yet? Thanks, Kara. Thought bubble.
It's called the ultimate beginner's drone, apparently. So that's good.
Smart.
Good for you.
Hey, nice. Thank you, Ian.
You're the ultimate beginner, Evan.
I am a neophyte when it comes to drones.
So how has everyone been for 2024? How'd the year go for you guys?
What a year.
Survived? Right. Is that the way to describe
still here?
It?
I think so, yeah.
This is our year-end show. This is our 20th year-end show that we've done.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Number 20. Wow.
Oh, boy.
We look back and at the SGU and science and skepticism and things and stuff over the last year. Yeah, this has been an interesting year.
There's a lot of subtext, I think, happening here.
Not necessarily in a good way.
Well, mixed bags, certainly, like most years. But, I mean, certainly there were a lot of milestones in 2024 for SGU in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, we passed our 1,000th episode in 2024. We had two great live events this year. Everything we did was – all the live events were really good. But we had two sort of outstanding ones. We had the Eclipse – mm-hmm. And we had our 1,000th episode. Both were
they were standouts.
Yeah, they were the largest audiences
we've had.
Unreal.
Yeah,
I know.
So long ago.
I know it does seem like a long time ago, but yeah,
world
was
away.
This year? Oh boy, the eclipse in Dallas was just
that was awesome.
I was especially happy for everyone there. You fellas for whom this was their first total solar eclipse.
Oh man, it was so unbelievable. And it was all the more dramatic. It was like a TV show because, like, it was cloud cover,
right?
And, you know,
we didn't know if it would happen.
Big but time the drama, la- right?
The
up
really,
to
like the last minute, the clouds part, the sky is clear, and then the eclipse happens, and it was just incredible.
You look up and like there's Sauron's eye in the sky.
Holy
crap! So surreal.
Lidless, wreathed in flame, and we saw the prominence. You know, at these. The red, the edge.
They were naked eye too. I was like, "What is that?" And then I looked closely, and like, "Oh my god!" It was
right,
so
we had
dramatic.
Those binoculars, and whoever set up the one on the stand,
yeah, very cool. And then we had a great audience for the 1,000th episode. It was very nice. People were so so supportive and everything. You know, being on this ride with us, it was awesome.
Yeah.
So it was a good year.
Yeah.
And a bad year.
We'll keep it at that. Don't talk about anything else.
Good stuff happened.
And show over.
It would be the last year we have electricity, but you know.
Well, Ian, apparently, by the 2030s, we're going to have commercial fusion power.
Oh.
Five to 10 years?
Is that
game
what
over,
you didn't
right?
hear that?
One of those?
Yeah, it's 5 to 10 years. Yeah.
5 to 10 years. Oh, now, this is like, this again just came out. We would definitely be talking about this as a news item if it wasn't just a review show. But a company, Commonwealth Fusion Systems, says we're going to have a commercial attached to the grid producing electricity fusion reactor in the 2030s. Like, okay, that's pretty ambitious. They haven't done it yet. I mean, they don't have a proof of principle even. They're just going to go straight to a commercial reactor.
Who said that, Steve?
The company. What do you mean, who said
company.
That?
Yeah, so this is the Commonwealth Fusion Systems, which, remember, this is like a split off of MIT, right?
Yeah.
Or are they partnered with
MIT? They're collaborating with MIT's Plasma Science and Fusion Center. Yeah.
So this is the fusion plan idea, you know, what their specific approach. This is the one that I'm most hopeful for, because first we got MIT's is in the loop, which of course, you know, raises it as much as they can. I mean, it's MIT. MIT's awesome. But the other part is that they started with this super powerful, small, really, you know, it's like a 20 Tesla magnetic field. It's like the most powerful in the world, far more powerful than the ITER tokamak reactor, what they're using. And that's what's going to make it much smaller and cheaper. And I don't know. Fusion is fusion. And they say it's going to be in the 2030s and it could be in the 2050s. I don't know. But if I had to put money down, I would put it on these guys. And the other thing I like is that they're saying they're not going to create a test facility to proof of concept for the next test facility that will then usher in the final, you know, working facility. No, they're saying this is it. This is the one that's going to be able to connect to the grid, and they're going to build it, and they say they can run it in the 2030s. You know, I don't think it's going to be less than a decade necessarily, but hey, if they're confident, it gives me a little bit more hope, I'll say. A little bit more.
I don't know. I'm extremely skeptical. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm 100% wrong about this.
Yeah.
It's just this has been the Lucy's football for Charlie Brown for the last 50, 60 years. It's always been 20 years away, you know what I mean? And they haven't done it yet. The thing is, they have not produced plasma. They haven't produced net energy. They're just saying, this is our design. It's going to work. And we'll overcome these hurdles. Yeah, it's like, yeah, that's...
Yeah, we've heard that before.
Yeah, we've heard that before. There's a lot of ifs. And if they do it, it's literally the science and technology news of the century.
Sure.
If they freaking
do it.
Oh,
wow.
Huge. This will very true. I mean, talk about planet-saving technology.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, but damn.
But this is a private enterprise, right? Like, how are they getting funding?
They're getting funding.
Yeah, it has to. Yeah.
But I mean, you know, billions of dollars? Yeah. Or they need, like, trillions of dollars?
Billions.
I mean,
this is billions.
Okay.
Billions, yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, yeah, do they need trillions of dollars to actually accomplish it? You know what I mean? Like, who's to say? But
I mean, no, maybe not now, but the farther you go in the past, it would probably, you know, potentially reach that amount.
Yeah. I'm
But, I mean, their claim is that they'll be able to demonstrate net fusion energy, which of course is nebulous. I'm trying to look it up, and it just means that more energy is going to be produced than it consumes. Well, what does that mean? Because we know the National Ignition Facility, right? They were using inertial confinement. They did it. They hit ignition and all that good stuff. But still, they produce more energy than the lasers that hit that nugget, that hull room. But the thing is, the energy that they created to do it was like hundreds of times more than it was produced. So it's like, yeah, it's net energy only in this confined area. But if you step back a few paces, no. So what do they mean by net fusion energy? Does it mean soup to nuts, like all the energy, or not? That's the thing. And then that's what I'm not sure about right here, what they're saying net fusion. I doubt it.
Well, that's all that matters.
But if it's not real net energy, they're not going to be producing energy for the grid.
Exactly. That's all that matters.
Right.
Is that it's... Yeah,
exactly. And even they may do it. Say they actually do it and it works. This is it. We could plug this into the grid. It still just might be eventually just too expensive. It's like, you know, this works, but it's just too much money. Solar and wind and geothermal is just going to be much cheaper, and we can get the same for less. So then it still might be an obscure, like, niche thing that, oh, look, this really works, but too bad we can't make a lot of them because it's just too damn expensive. Who knows at this point?
But this isn't one of the science news items of the year.
No,
this is just a bold ass claim. Let's start. So usually we start by just reviewing the SGU over the last year. We talked about our standout live events. You know, we'll pick our own sort of favorite moments, interviews, shows, etc., and then we'll mention any feedback we got from listeners. Ian, do you have any from the Discord or from?
Yeah, I mean, we could jump right into we sent out a form from our listeners that specifically call out the skeptical hero and skeptical jackass. We could scroll down to the best science news items of the year.
Let's start with SGU moments, best interview, best episode.
We have let me give the list then. We have favorite dig on woo and nonsense, favorite Evan pun, favorite passionate moments from Jay, favorite rogue segment, and favorite astronomy segment. Maybe we can go into those. The highest science or fiction is winning currently. So that's a general statement, I think.
I think that wins every year.
The dumbest thing of the week song.
Yes. Thank you for that acknowledgement, by the way. I knew the audience. I knew we had one of the best audiences in all of podcasting.
Somebody said that time that Kara reminded us she's from L.A.
Oh. That one time.
That one time. That one time. Being a little snarky
please,
there,
you guys
sir.
Don't talk about Connecticut constantly.
Never,
on the show.
Never.
Hey, only when we're talking about pizzas. Over
and weather and trees and bears and literally everything.
Right.
All right,
never talk about panthers.
Or... Name That Logical Fallacy came in second place to science or fiction.
That's true. Yeah. That is true. Yeah, that's a good one.
What are those 2 seconds in common, I wonder?
Everyone likes guest rogue Andrea.
Yeah, she was very popular.
Who doesn't love Andrea?
Which is nice.
I think because, because she's very logical and scientific on a topic, politics, that we don't talk about, like political science. You know what I mean? It's a science that we don't talk about that much. Yeah. I remember when I first saw Andrea, it was her lecture at Nexus on political science. I'm like, this is awesome. This is really good information about a topic
more.
That I usually don't hear about.
That was pre-pandemic.
I remember.
Nexus.
I specifically remember when she did Nexus. I remember thinking, this is the best talk of the conference.
Oh, you're right.
She was hilarious, and she made something that you wouldn't think is really as interesting as she made it. It was just, I was so enamored. It's like, wow, she kicked butt.
Well, she's a performer as well.
She is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So she combines
– literally a circus performer.
Exactly. So she combines those talents to make it a very effective communicator. Right?
Speaking of best talks at a conference, let's talk about Steve while he's not here.
Yes.
Okay. Right? How amazing was his talk at SciCon this year?
It kind of brought the house down.
It was amazing. It was amazing. I remember people coming up to Steve afterward sobbing. I almost lost it. It was like, holy crap. I mean, this from
appreciation, sobbing in appreciation.
And I've heard of other people talking about it at a recent skeptical event in New York this past couple of weeks. Like, people were still talking about it. It was such an amazing talk. So
absolutely.
Good.
Somebody who took the survey did answer for their favorite rogue segment that the discussion on gender was really interesting and timely, and Stephen Kerr did a great job. What people may not realize is that Steve, I don't remember, did we talk about this on the show even a little bit after SciCon?
We talked a little bit
so
about
you
it,
may
yeah.
you may remember that we talked about, but you didn't get to hear, that Steve gave this incredible talk in Vegas this year about sex and gender, and it was really measured, and it was honestly a breath of fresh air within the skeptical movement, where we often see a lot of division and a lot of talks and writings that are quite fraught.
Absolutely. That, and these things do happen within the movement. We've seen it before, and this is necessary. This is healthy. And this is what does help keep the movement going, frankly, as far as I'm concerned.
What you're referring to is when skeptics disagree.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And that was really the title of his talk.
Yeah. Exactly.
And luckily, what Steve talks about comports with reality. So there is always that.
That's always
benefit.
Helpful, right?
You know what I mean? That helps a little bit.
It does help. Just a little.
Just a little.
I feel like we did a lot of talking about reality this year, and people seem to vote for a lot of favorite moments where we talked about reality as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a super complicated topic. So many of the things we talk about have levels of complication, but this one in particular, and it hits on so many levels, you know, scientific, social, and otherwise, very difficult for lay people to wrap their minds around what's really going on here. So this was necessary.
But there were a lot of really great moments for the SGU this year. Almost too many to name. What do you guys think?
Well, there was that time earlier this year when we were mentioned on John Oliver's show.
Right. Oh, for like half a second.
Yeah.
Yep. Hey, it was on the screen.
It was there. I screenshot it.
1 second.
It counts.
This is about UFOs and regarding our talk with President Jimmy Carter on it.
Right.
Which was one of, you know, still a highlight in our interview lives. But that screenshot, I took pictures of it. I took multiple pictures until it was perfect. It was hard to find that damn frame stopping the video. But, oh, man, loved it.
And we should track what you talk about on the show versus what they then talk about on John Oliver or something like that. I feel like there's some maybe listeners in the writer room. Maybe,
I wouldn't shock me. It's not only that. It's not just like the topics that they cover. Occasionally they say things like, there's no way they heard about that outside of the skeptical movement. Mm-hmm, like there was the one episode where they specifically talked about p-hacking. Mm-hmm. I mean, p-hacking, that's totally a science-based medicine kind of skeptical phrase. Like the chances of them encountering that and understanding the role that it plays in like pseudoscience and medicine is pretty minimal unless they're plugged in to some extent. To some skeptical outlets, you know.
Right, science-based medicine.
Science-based medicine, probably. Right.
Yeah, or science. I mean, I do think that it's quite likely that many of the writers on that show are skeptics themselves.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, and whether they are actively monitoring, you know, skeptical literature or whether they themselves – because I do think there are way more skeptics in the world than there are people plugged into the skeptic movement.
Yeah, I hope
and
so.
And we've got to capture all of them.
That's right.
Yeah.
And communicate
and if they're
with
listening,
each other.
If they're listening right now, hey, you know, maybe you can just mention our URL. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Throw us a bone. All right, you guys want to talk about science news of the year?
Sure.
Okay.
You know, compared to previous years, like looking at like the best, most exciting science news of the year, it was a little dry. There wasn't a lot out there. Usually it's like, oh, God, it's like 50, 60 things. What am I going to talk about? It was hard for me to really find anything
big. Stand out,
Yeah, but I'm just give you a few of the ones that consistently came up that I agree these are interesting news items. So one is just the James Webb Space Telescope, the JWST. That's big news.
Oh, yeah. Every past few years, it's been the top of the science news.
Yeah.
Amazing discoveries.
A new HIV drug, lenacapavir.
Yeah, that was my pick.
Yep, huge.
Basically, I mean, basically a vaccine. 6 months of coverage.
Yeah.
With one shot.
For what?
Wow.
HIV.
The HIV.
Yeah.
6 months in one shot.
A vaccination, yep. Yeah.
So a year. That
it's not a classic vaccine in the sense of vaccine.
Yes,
but it is a shot.
Mm-hmm. Carry the five.
I thought that the mRNA cancer vaccines that I was reading on those recently, and that is pretty damn impressive and potentially a game changer in so many ways.
And that's the thing, right? When we talk about like best science of the year, it's often potentially cool stuff or cool stuff that actually is happening. Mm-hmm. And we always have to kind of, I think, toe that line, right? Yeah. Like, I hope this thing happens. It happened in a mouse.
Yeah.
Or versus, we were able to do
happening.
It once
yeah.
versus, yeah, like, ooh, this is like on the market or this is actually happening.
Yeah. Very few eurekas or breakthroughs that hit so hard it overshadowed everything else. Mm-hmm. Speaking of overshadowing, if I may say, what I found to be really interesting this year, more like science themes in a way, like AI was a huge overall topic with 100 news items about AI. And something else that kind of fit that category for me was the moon.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of news items revolved around the moon.
Yeah.
Not just the eclipse. Okay. So we spoke about that already. Japan in January of 2024 achieved their first landing on the moon with their SLIM mission. Or how about in February when a private company that was the Odysseus lander, Intuitive Machines, first time a U.S. unmanned landing happened in 50 years. It was 50 years ago. That happened also this year. China not only launched and landed on the moon, but successfully returned samples from the moon as well. Oh, did you know we got a second temporary moon this year?
We talked about
that as well, right? And then there were the other other moons within our solar system. The Europa Clipper launch, the JUICE mission that got its boost around Venus this year. Three new moons identified in our solar system, one around Uranus and two around Neptune.
Mm-hmm.
So increasing that, and of course what they are saying was perhaps the first confirmed exomoon that they were able to discover through volcanic activity. So there were moon news items all over the place. So I think it was the year of the moon.
Well,
as far
but
as
Evan, there was big Mars news that I don't know if we covered this. I think it was because it was in August when we were doing our 1,000th episode.
Potential evidence for microbial
potential biosignatures in rock on the surface of Mars.
Yeah.
This is not smoking gun evidence that, yes, there was life on Mars, but there was organic matter decisively detected by the Perseverance rover that, you know, could be a biosignature that there was, at least in the ancient, you know, Mars, there may have been life. That is amazing.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I saw that. I came across that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was interesting. But, yeah, of course, like you said, no smoking gun, so don't go running around.
But that's that certainly is... That's certainly an important piece of evidence, though, organic matter on Mars. We mapped the fruit fly brain this year. That was huge.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The entire brain, right? And that's the first entire mapping of
At that level. Yeah, it was like pretty resolved. It had a lot of detail, which is very cool.
So we can tell what they're thinking now? Is that...
Yeah, no. Now we know their plots, their plans to take up.
Why are they following me everywhere?
Little Drosophila melanogaster. Bastard.
The World Health Organization's 20-year review of cell phone and brain cancer data showing no risk of brain cancer from cell phone use. That kind of, even though it was a review, that kind of science is extremely important. You know, doing a really good systematic review of like 20 years of data and putting that out there. It's like, nope, it's not causing cancer. Don't worry about it.
But what about that video on TikTok?
That video on TikTok?
That one.
I'm sure we're going to mention TikTok a
Who
few
knows
times.
All those things.
That's really good news. Now I have good reason to become even more addicted to my phone.
Great.
Mine's taped to my head right now.
I can give you a bunch of reasons not to, but nothing to do with
other issues.
Those reasons I ignore.
I love that on the poll of our listeners of their best science news item of the year, like some of the answers are so good. Like the one about black holes.
Yeah.
That one about black holes. Yeah. That one time Bob spoke about black holes.
That one time.
Yeah.
We got orcas wearing hats. Yeah. Oh, Havana syndrome. Remember we talked about that?
That was an interesting.
Oh, my God.
That was interesting.
That was this year?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's a complicated story.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
CRISPR curing people's sickle cell?
CRISPR, yeah. CRISPR used to cure sickle cell. That's pretty slick,
That's
man.
Pretty huge.
CRISPR, baby.
Yeah, CRISPR.
Didn't they have lab-grown kidneys, too, this year? Was it this year?
I don't think it really crossed a line. That's kind of, you know what I mean? That's...
I think someone just got a pig kidney, recently.
Yeah, the pig kidney.
Or the day before. But yeah, I'm not sure if they're viable yet, the lab-grown ones.
There was more evidence that Alzheimer's disease can be transferable, can transfer from human to human.
Mm. Oh, my gosh.
Did you guys hear about
that?
That's
scary. When the hell
did that happen? Good.
Yeah, I was like...
Keeping it light today.
How do you think that happens?
Eating brains.
If you share cerebral spinal fluid?
Eating brains.
Oh. You guys are actually on the right track. It's not specifically necessarily that, but... there's increasing evidence that Alzheimer's disease, part of it is a misfolded protein, like mad cow disease,
like a prion.
That is transferable. You know, it's a
Oh my God,
it's a misfolded beta amyloid.
Prions,
prion.
I mean, I know it's not a prion because it's a beta amyloid. It probably has its own name, but they are terrifying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Steve, people that treat people on a daily basis have a higher chance of
getting exposed to actual brain tissue. Yeah.
Okay.
So I guess though, if you're doing a open surgery or something and the person has Alzheimer's, although the ethics of that I think are complicated.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to consent to brain surgery.
Speaking of TikTok, SGU did hit a milestone. Our highest downloaded TikTok video, 8.7 million downloads.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Nice.
That's nuts.
Views, not downloads.
Views, whatever. Views.
And you planned for that to happen right from the creation of the video.
We knew that was the one.
On the radio.
That was going to be.
When I made it, I'm like, I turned to Ian, like, Ian, this is the one that's going to hit.
That's right. This is the one.
We knew.
You'll remember
it. We knew.
We had no
perfect,
idea.
You used the perfect formula is what you did. You had a plan. You put it into place.
I was sitting in my pajamas posting the video, and I was like, oh, yeah, I can feel it.
I can feel it. I'm going to hit. Just in time for TikTok to get banned in the United States.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
What?
Honest answer. How old do we sound right now?
I would not scream boomer from the top of my lungs, but no, it's okay.
What, with that MySpace and all.
Yeah, right. You know, the top five. No, it was pretty out of nowhere. I just looked at it and I was like, this has to be a mistake. Like, clearly we didn't hit a million views in a day. And now it's up to like 9 million. It keeps going up, even though it has kind of peaked.
It's leveling off. But yeah, it's like 8.7 right now. It's, cool.
It just goes to show you how random that is.
It's very random. I don't know what we did different.
Nobody knows.
So does that mean quantity?
Careers are to chase that.
Yeah.
Does that mean quantity matters?
Yes. I mean,
I don't say this to belittle, but like that's not that high for TikTok.
No, certainly. No. It's not massive.
So, yeah.
It's high for us.
Totally. It is high for us. But no, Evan, I wouldn't say it's a quantity reason. It's just, it's a fluke. Somebody shares something and it takes off.
Yeah, the algorithm is weird. And, you know, it picks what it likes randomly.
Well, people
know.
Pick what they like.
That's true, too. Yeah, and that
But then the big
the
things
algorithm.
Get shared more because they get seen more. Mm-hmm. It's like a runaway effect.
Right, feedback loop kind of thing. Yeah.
And then, of course, there's my favorite topic that I covered this year, this news item. If you remember, it was the nuclear pasta talk, which was I was just giggling while I was researching it more than anything else. If you remember, we're talking about not black holes, but neutron stars. And if you go a certain depth, not too deep, but a certain depth, you have the strong force and the electrostatic force battling it out for supremacy, right? And there's a balance with these forces such that it distorts nuclear matter into these stable states. And the scientists that I love so much, my favorite scientists, because they call these states, there's the gnocchi state, there's a spaghetti, lasagna, and bucatini, depending on how the stable shape that these nuclear forces kind of put them in. And they are so strong. I mean, they're inside a neutron star. So this is no surprise that the strength or shear modulus, a quintillion times the strength of diamond. So that was just so much fun. The idea that these guys, you know, being an Italian astronomy geek, of course, I love this. And it was just one of my favorite news items to research.
And I knew immediately it had nothing to do with black holes because that is strictly spaghettification.
Actually, no. But okay, I like you to there.
Do we talk about – I know we're going to talk about pseudoscience. Do we talk about the most like terrifying news item or do we just skip
Go
that
ahead.
And keep
terrifying?
Terrifying?
Yeah, do it.
Hit me.
Go ahead.
I mean very recently, as in like just – was it last week? For me, the fact that scientists discovered that only one gene mutation is necessary for the bird flu to go from human to human transmission, when we used to think that three different mutations had to happen. One away with a very – we will be getting there, but a very interesting team in place to handle that.
Oh, Lord.
There was a lot of like scary bad news about the climate this year. I mean, there's a lot. A lot going on. It's just always the hottest.
Do we know yet, or they haven't announced it?
We are on track for 2024 to be the hottest year on record.
Yep. There
Keeping the last 10 years as the hottest last 10 years on record.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Probably not a coincidence. Scientists predicted it. Climate deniers denied it. The deniers were wrong. Mm-hmm. Absolutely wrong.
Will they admit it?
No. They just move the goalposts.
Yep. Shrug.
All right, it's warm, but how do we know people are doing it? All right, people are doing it, but how do we know it's going to be a bad thing? All right, it's going to be a bad thing, but what can we do about it?
You know, right. Whatever. It's like,
I can't afford that. Hey,
and then, Steve, why didn't you tell us sooner?
Yeah,
that's coming up soon.
You and your mixed messages.
So you guys remember earlier in the year, we talked about the Deep Sea Vision that announced they may have spotted Amelia Earhart's plane.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yep.
My gosh.
What we didn't say is that in November, they said, oh, never mind. They said a natural rock formation. That was it.
Oh, really?
Never mind.
And how many times in history has something natural been mistaken it for something artificial like that?
Oh, all the time. This, again, just one more example. Like when you're looking at things, either like you're looking at things at the bottom of the ocean or you're looking at things from like satellite imagery, looking at the Earth or looking at other planets. You know, rocks can look like stuff. You know what I mean? Yeah, natural formations
lines happen.
can look like stuff. You know, you got the face on Mars. Remember the Bigfoot Eridolia. On Mars?
Sure.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff. And so this, it kind of looked like a plane, but it didn't look like Amelia Earhart's plane, and like the details didn't match. And again, it's the blob squatch phenomenon. Like it was indistinct always. Enough that it could be a plane, could be a
maybe
rock.
It's an underwater drone.
Right. Turned out it was a rock, you know?
Oh. Breaking news, Amelia Earhart's drone discovered at the bottom of the ocean.
But what's interesting, though, is if you look very, very closely in the cockpit of the plane was Bigfoot flying. You could clearly see.
Well, who else?
The continuous Pentagon UFO nonsense is still a big story of the year.
Please, it's going to get worse,
too. It's going to get worse.
It's going to get worse.
I just feel like we lost that one, you know, in a way, because the UFO nuts managed to get enough attention at the, you know, at the government level that people now have this baseline impression, just like in society, that, oh, the government says that UFOs are real. Like, this is a thing now. And you have mainstream journalists writing in, like, the New York Times, like, yeah, UFOs exist now. They're real. It's like, no, that's not what happened, people. That's not what happened. This is nothing. This is the same old cranks shopping around the same old, you know, debunked evidence and just more blurry, indistinct photos, just like this Amelia Earhart's plane natural rock formation. It's nothing. It's nothing. But they managed to just cross that line, you know, culturally. It's just really frustrating.
Yeah. It's cultural saturation, as I like to call it. And we talked about this at our 1,000th recording in Chicago.
Yeah.
Looking back at 20 years worth of this evidence, and it's the same story, just repackaged.
Yeah, just repackaged.
In modern terms and examples. Nothing has changed.
Mm-hmm. This year also saw the death of Stern. Talk about repackaging the same old nonsense.
Finally.
The free energy machines, right? Every time they pop up, like, no, there's no free energy. You know, you can't violate the laws of thermodynamics. Sorry, no. But then it's the same crap, you know, oh, but we really did it this time. It's like, no, you didn't. And then it takes years to play out. It's like, oh, it looks like they didn't do it. You know, of course they didn't
do it.
It did.
A little sad to see that one go. It gave us, I think, at least a half dozen segments or news items to talk about over the 15 years that it lasted.
Ian, is there anything else?
Favorite Evan pun. Did you know that that is an item on our form?
Took
Evan.
Me by surprise.
That, you know, people, I guess, love to comment on. Even in the Discord, they talk about, you know, each episode. It's like, did you hear this one? Did you hear that one? Especially the ones that are under your breath that Steve apparently catches, but maybe flies
eventually
by.
I edit, yes. It's like leaving an Easter egg for my co-hosts.
That's right. So a recent one on episode 1013, which is 1013, Steve mentioned weasels, and Evan quietly said, pop. Not sure if it qualifies as a pun.
Absolutely.
But I had to pause while I laughed.
It was deliberate.
Evanism.
I received several DMs through my Facebook account on that one, about four people.
Most people say they just need a list to pick, like multiple choice, or they like all of them.
It's not something we track.
Right, that's
not
true.
Like quotes or, you know, statistics for science or fiction, but maybe going forward.
Yeah, if anybody wants to do that work and
maybe Ian will volunteer for that.
Yeah.
The AI will be
what
it's actually good for.
That'll
definitely
be a good
break
use
it.
Of AI. Go through the transcript of every episode for the year and pull out all the puns. Oh, I like it.
There's one person who says, I dislike puns. It's like, okay, buddy.
It's like when people are like, I don't like chocolate.
I don't like
I hate massages.
Right.
Yes, all right.
Exactly.
Cool guy.
All right, buddy. Anyway, good work on that, Evan. From Jay, passionate moment. Let's see if it has seeped into the milieu of the podcast. What do you guys think is the most popular Jay passionate moment?
Does that include the live streams or just on the show?
It includes
the live
streams.
Stream.
Hint, hint, wink, wink.
I mean, Jay's epic meltdown a couple weeks
there
ago.
We are.
I mean, would you call it a meltdown? 100%.
Explosion.
Yeah.
You know you
got,
I mean?
Not everybody who listens to the show watches the live stream. I'm not on the live stream. So tell us what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jay.
So.
So
I mean, look, I've made it very clear where I stand politically, and I know
deep
this is a skeptical podcast, but the bottom line is, you know, I am a human being, and I'm going to I'm going to react in one way or another. So it was a week after the election. I was so bottled up after that travesty. Steve and I were doing our live stream, business as usual. Everything's cool. We're laughing. We're doing some funny segments. You know, Steve and I had some good banter going on. And then Ian pops up this video of RFK talking about how the Democrats have, you know, basically like democratized or you know.
Politicized?
No, basically like they've quantified nature to like it's a transactional relationship that we have with nature. But he thinks that nature, we should preserve nature because humans have this spiritual connection. He gets all into that vein of things, right? Mm-hmm. I freaked out, right? Like I'm like, this guy is going to be in charge of the health of millions of people. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, babies are going to die because they're not going to get vaccinated. And, mm-hmm. you know, trans people are going to have a hell of a time getting health care that they need, you know, and he thinks that, you know, people become trans because of chemicals in the water. You know, all this is going through my head. And next thing I know, I'm screaming. I just started screaming.
Yep.
And then I proceeded to tell Steve, Ian, and everybody watching every single thing that I felt that I've not said in the past week. Mm-hmm. And it went on for a very long time. And it was cathartic, I have to admit.
Yeah, but that's what I was going to ask, if it was cathartic. We don't yeah, of often course have an audience for those moments.
Yeah. You know, I got, you know, some people didn't like it, of course. A lot of people, you know, seem to completely understand and share similar feelings. You know, most of us in the skeptical movement, I think, are skeptical of Trump. You know, we watched everything that he's done. And, you know, look, it's not about, like, I don't care about political parties. I've made that perfectly clear. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I'm a voter. Mm-hmm. And I think over the last 20 years of me honing my skeptical skills, that I can look at someone and make a judgment call on them and not have party affiliation in any way, you know, get involved. I just don't care about that.
Well, it also doesn't capture people anymore. Like, yeah. It's weird. Like, if you True. Put RFK on a map and go, what party is this man in? You would be like, well...
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Over here, he's
the
this.
Grift
there,
party.
to reiterate our position, which I think is important for our audience to understand, we are nonpartisan. It doesn't mean we're not political because we talk about issues that have a political dimension. It's unavoidable. Just like we are not anti-religion, but we will talk about religious topics that have a scientific or critical thinking angle. We will talk about creationism as a pseudoscience, right? So, the thing about Trump, which has really been challenging for us, we're trying to maintain our show as a science show and critical thinking show that's not, you know, nakedly partisan, is that Trump is a global warming denier. He is really has a lot of anti-vaccine views, right? He has a lot of pseudoscientific views. And we talked about him. I've been writing about him long before he became a political candidate about mm-hmm. on these facts. He's a conspiracy theorist. You know, we have to talk about those things. They are perfectly cromulent, skeptical topics, no matter what your partisanship is, right? Whether you are a Republican or a Democrat or whatever, he's still a naked global warming denier, a pseudoscientist. And same thing, RFK, I don't care if he's a Democrat or Republican, the guy is a crank from beginning to end. He is a dangerous crank. And it is bad for our country to have a medical crank in charge of our healthcare. That's not a partisan issue. That is a science and skepticism issue, 100%.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, I got hit emotionally so hard, you know, dealing with the reality of people now that are going to assume massive power, pulling in very important levers. And I think we're going to see a significant and very dangerous downturn in the quality of lots of things, but healthcare in particular is what I've been really focusing on since the election.
The risk is certainly there. We don't know how things are going to actually yeah. play out, but the risk is mm. certainly
no,
there.
No, but we know that there's intentionality
yeah,
for
absolutely.
Things to happen that will end in death.
Mm-hmm.
So in the scary. End, that was yeah. it. You know, like it was Steve was trying to reel me back in, and you know. Most of the times in my life, Steve is very good at reeling me back in. He could not reel me back in.
It took me time. I eventually got you there. It took some time.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, the end result was...
There was a meatball involved.
I wish I didn't do it. you know, simply because.
You wish you didn't have to do it, right?
Yeah, I guess I wish I wasn't put in a situation where, you know, look, I'm a highly emotional person. Like, I'm going to have emotional outbursts and stuff like that. It was a little bit too much for me to keep bottled up, and I guess I should have started talking about it. You know, and yes, letting it out, and kind
that's
of,
the difference. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, it's funny that you thought it was that one.
It's fine. It was such an extreme event that happened. Really, I mean, it was really in all of our thinking, it was disastrous for not only the country but beyond. Yeah, you. So what? You vented a little bit. I mean, come on. It's probably healthier to vent it than keep it in and explode like I'm going to do when I'm 70.
But I thought Jay did explode.
Yeah, no, I did. It was an unmitigated explosion.
That was a controlled explosion. I'm talking about the psychologically damaging effects when you hold stuff in for long periods of time.
Yeah, but Kara and I
result of holding things in. That is not emotion regulation.
Kara, right? You and I have talked about this a lot. Yeah. Like I am a firm believer in expressing your emotions. Not, you know, Absolutely. Don't be stoic to the point where you're not talking to yourself about your emotions, you're bottling it up, you're hiding everything that you think and feel from other people. Like there's some aspect of that going on here. The subtext in our society is like, you can't show any seams, you know, and I don't like that, and I don't operate that way.
No, you got to feel your feelings, and then the work is in learning how to regulate your emotions.
Definitely.
Yeah
it's definitely.
Not expressing yourself is fine, just not necessarily on a live stream.
This is the question I often ask my patients, and I know it's going to sound pithy and kind of silly, but sit with it for a second. Do you have your feelings, or do your feelings have you?
Yeah.
And I know it's silly, but you want to have your feelings. When your feelings start to have you, there's probably some work to be done in learning how to regulate your emotions a little bit.
Yeah, and I think, again, like to put a exclamation point at the end of this, sometimes your feelings do have you, and that's okay. It's going to happen. It shouldn't be a daily event. Absolutely not.
Well, even when your feelings have you, you should have done the work so that your behavior is not detrimental. It is not good to explode in anger. It is not good to react in a way that causes pain and suffering to the people around you. I'm not saying that's what you did. I'm just saying that's what can happen when your feelings have you. And that's what we work on, right? We can't control what we feel, but we can control what we do when we feel those things.
Yeah.
It takes work.
Yeah.
Ian, anything else from the peanut gallery?
Yeah. Well, it's funny that Jay picked that one because it seems like the consensus is the Olive Garden rant more than that.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Oh, yes.
Oh, man. The Olive Garden thing was funny and I think very factual.
It was fact-driven.
So from a recent venture at SciCon, who do you think the favorite interview is? I'm just going to tell you. It's Brian Cox.
Oh, yeah. Brian Cox was awesome.
Sure.
That was a no-brainer for the year, for the even, I'd say, 5 years. I mean Brian Cox.
Yeah, he's great, but coming in very close under. And we've got Andrea, She's Kevin awesome. Folta, and Michael Mann all tied.
Yep. Yeah.
My
yeah.
vote is for They're Andrea Love and Michael Mann. I thought those were great interviews. Yeah.
I really liked the Michael Mann interview.
Yeah,
I did too. I mean, you know what, though?
That was wonderful as well, yeah.
I love when we interview Kevin because, you know, first of all, you know, I'm a huge fan of fruit. And anytime Kevin talks about his farm and what he's doing and, like, you know, the industry and the secret things that he knows about how screwed up the industry is. And, you know, like one thing I keep asking him the same thing because I just love hearing him talk about, like, how, you know, they've selectively bred fruit to be beautiful and big, but the flavor's gone, you know, and he knows all about that. And I sometimes I'll send Kevin like images of fruit I find on the internet and be like, what is this? I want to get that, you know. So anyway, I love that interview we did with Kevin because I thought we hit on a series of really cool topics that were all kind of revolving around fruit and pesticides and all that stuff. I find it really fun and interesting.
And don't forget, I got to throw in there our buddy Christian Hubicki. We did maybe two interviews with him this year, didn't we?
He was with us as a special appearance in Chicago over the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And a standalone interview as well.
That's right.
Yeah, he's always fun and informative, which is a great killer combination.
Well, he's another person where, you know, he's got an expertise that we're all interested in, but we don't really get to talk
robotics
about that much.
Expert.
You know, he's a roboticist and, you know, he's, you know, actively working on, you know, pushing that ball forward. And, like, you know, he was one of the first people I think he was actually the very first person I talked to that was like, explained it to me in a way that I got it. Like, why is it so hard? And, you know, he kind of likened it to, you know, look at autonomous cars. Like, we got really far. We got to the 80% mark pretty fast. But it's that last 20% that means everything and that has all the special stuff that we want that's going to be super hard and time-consuming to get to. You know, will we have a humanoid robot walking around our home doing laundry? You know, and he said, you know, not soon. You know, like, it's going to take time. It's going to take a lot of time.
I think the theme here is that what the favorite interviews have in common is those people who have a very high level of topic expertise in an area that we're interested in, and they're great science communicators.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. For sure.
Mm-hmm. That's why I have to mention, you know, I know we said about Michael Mann. He, like, of all of the science communicators, the scientists talking about climate change, he's totally dialed in. He totally gets it. Like, not just the science, but the actual cultural contest that we are engaged in. You know what I mean?
Because he was in the fire, so to speak. Yeah. Right? Wasn't he the crosshairs? Stick?
Yeah, he's the hockey stick guy. Rather.
And the little trick or something in one of his emails or something.
The hide, the decline. No, that wasn't him.
Oh, okay. But the hockey stick.
But he was the hockey stick guy, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, everyone, we're going to take a quick break from our show to talk about our sponsor this week, Rocket Money.
Hey, as you are spending a lot of money this holiday season, now is a great time to take control of your bills. Rocket Money can help you find and cancel recurring bills that you might not even be aware of. Rocket Money also pulls together all of your spending across all of your different accounts so you can clearly see and track your spending habits and see where you can cut back.
Guys, I literally have more than a quarter of a million emails. It's nuts. And all laced within all of them are these subscriptions and all these things. And some of them are kind of like subscriptions, but they're not. They're not really paid. It's just nuts to go through all that and try to deal with it. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that helps find and cancel your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features.
So cancel your unwanted subscriptions and reach your financial goals faster with Rocket Money. Go to rocketmoney.com/SGU today. That's rocketmoney.com/SGU, rocketmoney.com/SGU.
All right, guys, let's get back to the show. All right, let's move on. We got the skeptical hero and the skeptical jackass of the year. Which one should we do first?
I'm going to start with the skeptical hero.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, this is obvious, right? For those of you especially who are at the SGU 1000 show. I mean, without a doubt, Steve, I'm picking you as the skeptical hero for a few reasons I think that everyone will agree with. First, you know, I know Steve's my brother, and it might seem a little corny or cliche, but just hear me out. Steve has been the host of this podcast for 20 years. Steve has produced over 1,000 shows. He's never missed one because Steve has to be the primary host and Steve does all the editing. It's a massive, incredibly time consuming thing that Steve has, over the years, you know, it went from about 10 hours. I think, Steve, you're down to about what, 4 hours of editing a week now?
No, but the show's gotten longer, right? Yeah. So it used to be an hour, then an hour 20. Now it's more like an hour 40, 50. It's still taking me 6 hours to do the show.
Okay.
You know, soup to nuts.
Yeah, it's an incredible amount of work, and Steve's dedication is remarkable. You know, Kara, you weren't there from the beginning, but you do know, like, Steve is the driving force that makes everything happen. Mm. I gave a speech about Steve at the 1000th show. Mm-hmm. I know that Steve didn't publish that, so you can hear that speech if you're a patron of the SGU, even at the $0 amount, right? You're just a patron at the $0 level. You could see that video of me giving that speech about Steve. That'll be in the feed when you listen to the show. So bottom line is, I realized this as we were coming up on the 1000th show. I realized, you know, I have a very inside picture of all the work that Steve does. And Steve and I, you know, run the SGU together. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of happiness. It's a lot of tears. You know, there's a lot of frustrating things. But overall, you know, this project and this work that we do has been an enormously positive thing in our lives. And I can't help but look at it and realize that Steve, you know, without him, it wouldn't exist. It couldn't exist, I think, without Steve in its current form. And I just wanted everyone to realize that listens to the show, you know, Steve is the person that fills up the oil lamps and makes sure that the clocks and trains are on time, you know, in a profound way. I have to say that the you know, I gave Steve a samurai sword as his award. I didn't want to give him some acrylic plaque with his name on it that has like a starburst, you know, like I've seen a million of those.
Oh man, I could have gotten the starburst plaque.
Yeah, you know, the shooting star one. But I mean, I've seen those, and I was thinking, you know, I want to get something for Steve. Bottom line is, I, you know, the samurai sword hit me and I'm like, oh my God, this is perfect.
Hope you're okay.
And then I called George, and George helped me kind of like flesh out some ideas and everything, and it all really came together well. So we presented Steve this sword as his, you know, award for doing the show for 20 years and for being our leader. I mean, Steve, you know this. I've said this to you many times. You have always been a hero of mine. You're my skeptical hero. You're one of my best friends. You're my brother. You're someone I've looked up to my entire life, you know, from all the way back. Steve has been there giving me advice. Steve was the guy that told me, and I'll repeat this till I die. It had a massive impact on me. Steve said, and I was young. I was probably like 9 years old when he told me this. Not everybody grows up. You don't automatically become an adult when you get older. You have to work at being an adult to get yourself there. And it changed me because I realized I was coasting, you know, like, you know, and for the years that followed, I'm like, I gotta try to be an adult. You know, I have to, you know, put that energy in. And if it weren't for Steve, I'm not sure, you know, who I'd be or what I'd be or what I'd be doing with my creative time right now. It could have been nothing. I'd like to think otherwise, but it very well could have been that. So, Steve, I want to thank you, and I think everyone that listens to this show should take a moment to appreciate the fact that, you know, we are all part of this SGU community, and it's largely because of you. And I love you, and I think you're just one of the best people I've ever met in my life.
Thank you, Jay. Really appreciate that. That means a lot to me. And
watch the video. Everybody watch the video, because you will see the side of Steve's face, and he's almost crying for about 5 minutes.
Yeah, I was pretty verklempt the whole time.
He wasn't crying. You were crying.
By the time you hear this, it'll be available on Patreon for everyone, for free members. So there you go.
And I wanted to say one more thing, to add a little flourish to our mention about Steve's talk at SciCon. That talk was very, very impactful. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of layers to the onion there that Steve presented to all of us. You know, first of all, Steve was saying, we need to talk as skeptics. We need to be able to have discussions with each other. It's okay for us to disagree. We have to do it in a constructive way. And we should kind of, you know, get our story together before we go public with things. And, you know, we should spend the time talking to each other, figure things out. And then, you know, we could turn a collective face to the public, right? I agree with that sentiment. You know, Steve also was talking about an issue that means a lot to a lot of people, this issue about biological sex. It's not something that most people have an opinion about it one way or the other. I know that Steve's position is based on science and on critical thinking, because we've talked about it so much and we've gone into the weeds, and I've read most of Steve's blogs, if not all of them, about it. You know, Steve isn't coming at this with any kind of preconception. He wants to know what the science says, and he's talked to experts, and he's done an amazing amount of reading and consideration. So I just think it's important that Steve did do this, put the energy in. I think it's a really important topic. When Steve finished his talk, Barry Carr, who is the executive director of the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry at SciCon, he's also the producer of the SciCon conference. He said that was one of the most impactful skeptical talks that he's ever heard, and he's been around for pretty much all of them. And I would definitely agree, you know, as someone who attended almost every TAM and went to every single Nexus that was on the board and was, you know, running that with everybody else during those years when it was all live. And then we went to live stream. Like, I've been around these talks. I've heard everything. You know, I thought Steve's talk was not only entertaining on its surface, but my God, it had a punch that was so freaking hard. It was so valuable, and it was the kind of talk that I didn't realize that I was craving. You know, I want to hear talks like that, because it was provocative. There was humor in there. There was a lot of Steve's personality in there, and it had very important messages. And I learned a lot from listening to it. And I just think that Steve it was a triumph of you to do that and give such a high quality talk. I mean, that was you at the top of your freaking game.
Well, thanks. I mean, that's it. Doesn't get any better than that.
I mean, I'm sure you
can. It's all downhill from here, Steve.
All downhill. No, I appreciate it, Jay. Yeah, and the important thing I really wanted to get across is that this is what we should be talking about at these conferences. The stuff we disagree about, that's what we have to talk about. That's where we will learn the most and hone our understanding. And again, this also gets back to the psychological humility. We need to be humble. We need to be humble. We are not topic experts on everything. We are part of a community that has a ton of topic experts. We need to be talking to each other and take our own freaking advice. Listen to our own experts, you know? Mm-hmm. And I just think we need to do a lot more of that, especially on these controversial topics.
And, you know, I think an important side note here, throughout the years, like, you know, including ourselves, right? We are aware that we have biases, right? Bob mm-hmm. and I, in particular, like, are really positive about future technology. It's been something that we've been interested in since we were kids. You know, I want to believe that we're going to have a fusion reactor. You know what I mean? I want to believe that it's going to be unbelievable. You know, I'm also a big fan of artificial intelligence. You know, I use ChatGPT all the time. You know, I think we have to realize that all of us have these chinks in our armor, right? We will turn a blind eye to certain things. We all have sacred cows.
So we keep each other honest.
We need to keep each other honest. But, you know, we've seen over the years many skeptics, many of, you know, high profile skeptics get major things wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're wrong as well. Like, we're in that group as well. But I'm just saying, like, the humility that Steve is talking about, you have to have it, because no one is perfect, right? Like, we all are going to make these mistakes continuously for our entire lives. We're all going to do it. Hopefully we can lower the instances of it, but it's always going to be there. And that humility is so freaking important. Thank you again, Steve. That was another thing you taught me that really, you know, changed the way I look at my reality.
All right. Thank you, Jay. All right. Nobody else could pick me now. You have to mention other people that are your skeptical heroes.
Well, you know what's funny is I couldn't find one this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really struggled. Skeptical Jackass was really easy.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Yeah. We'll get to that.
I got one.
But Skeptical Hero was tough. I mean, I would definitely second what Jay is saying. The only other person I really thought of was Kamala for fighting the good fight and for really keeping Trump honest during those debates, you know, mm-hmm. and really like fact-checking in real time, pushing back against the rampant pseudoscientific claims that he was making. There are so many people out there fighting the good fight, but I couldn't come up with a single person this year whose heroism, other than you, Steve, like, honestly rises to a matching level of the jackassery that we saw this year. Mm-hmm. And that worries me.
That's interesting that you say that. I'll give you my opinion when you come when it gets to be my turn.
Yeah.
Well, then in that case, Carrie, you got to do what I did. You got to broaden your definitions a little bit. My skeptical hero is the Pentagon.
Okay.
Because of what they did March 2024, the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, AARO, released their UAP / UFO report. Mm-hmm. Their report was the biggest in scope and most thorough report of its kind, as far as I can tell. Their conclusion was this: to date, AARO has not discovered any empirical evidence that any sighting of a UAP represented off-world technology or the existence of classified program that has not been properly reported to Congress. Their scope was 1945 to 2023, and including classified information. There was no credible, not one report was credible, or of course there was no physical evidence. It was a great report. Of course, not many people heard about it or cared about it, and it did not even one whit to change the true believers, of course, because that's the way, that's what they do. Evidence is meaningless. But still, I was really fascinated reading that report and reading the reporting about it. They really did a fantastic job. They went to classified documentation that nothing was sacrosanct that they couldn't add to their report. And of course, they found nothing because there's nothing in there. We all know there's nothing to it. But still, they did a great job, regardless if it really didn't have much of an impact. Because how much impact do we even have? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Well, that dovetails, Bob, with my choice for someone who's a hero of the year. And not because he did something this past year. I think he needs to be recognized, frankly, for his body of work over, say, the last maybe 6-7 years that he's been in this game now. Mick West, who is there at the ready, at the call. He is our go-to person in our community and, frankly, you know, for everybody, when it comes to understanding what these UAPs could possibly be. And he explains it so beautifully through his series of videos and all the other explanations that he gives. I am so surprised he's not part and has not been asked to be a part of these investigations, congressional and otherwise, involving this, because his insights and his ability to really give good explanations as to what people are actually seeing, it goes beyond anything else anyone is doing in this particular field right now. He needs to be acknowledged. And for those of you who are the old school skeptics, he is our modern day Philip Klass. And we're very, very appreciative that he's doing and continues to do this work, because it's going to get more important as these sightings and things increase over time.
Yeah, and I think, let me double on that with Mick West. The patrons definitely think that Mick West is one of the skeptical heroes. Let me run through maybe the list of what they think real quick. Michael Mann, a bunch of the people that we also interviewed, Paul Offit, Dr. Brian Cox, Dr. Mike, which I think they said either of them, Dr. Mike, probably Varshavsky, and Dr. Mike Israetel. They're pretty cool science communicators on the YouTubes. Hank Green, if you guys are old-time YouTube heads, Hank Green, the Green Boys are actually pretty cool. Also CoffeeZilla, who pushes back a lot on like crypto stuff, is pretty neat to check out. But I have to agree with Kara's point. It's like, I couldn't think of a skeptical hero either that matches the jackassery that is out there.
Yeah.
So I kind of picked, and it's a little pandery, but I'm thinking like the skeptical listeners and critical thinkers out there who are still like in the fight to promote, you know, science or critical thinking or humanism or fighting for the good, greater good or whatever. They seem to, at least it could have easily fallen into where they're just like, forget it. We lost. You know, it's like, it's too much depression, has depressing things have happened and we can't go on, but that they're still here and listening and also pushing forward is that, thank you for still being a, you know, critical thinker, because we're going to need you guys probably for the next 4 to 40 years. We'll see.
Yeah. Everybody at Thanksgiving dinner who kept the table sane.
Yeah.
We appreciate that.
The one cousin.
Yeah.
Keeping it sane.
All right. Well, next time I'm going first because you guys stole a lot of my thunder. But this is my honest
pick. That makes us gods, by the way.
This is my honest pick. I'm not just reacting to what you guys said. Seriously. So I have three layers, right, of my skeptical hero of the year. Because I agree. There wasn't any one person who I thought deserved more of a mention than any other person. Mm-hmm. So first, I want to recognize my fellow rogues, you know, for standing by my side for 20 years, working really hard, tirelessly, never saying no, right? You guys just do whatever we want. We do it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I said, this is our lives. So this is what we're doing. You know, this is what we have chosen to spend a lot of our time doing, is just making the world a slightly more skeptical place. Beyond you, all of our fellow skeptical activists, people, again, who have not, they're not just skeptics. They're like, this is what I'm doing. I am going to start a podcast, start a blog, get out there, try to educate myself, try to communicate this, try to be, you know, advocate for science, skepticism, critical thinking, maybe in a narrow area that they're an expert in, maybe in general, and that includes you, Ian, and everybody who's just lending their skills to this whole effort of promoting skepticism. And then beyond that, of course, as Ian said, is all of our listeners. Yeah. It's the community, because again, we're nothing without our community. That's literally true. We'd be talking to ourselves. and so I think we do have to recognize that we are a community, all of us. And even though we are all flawed, we all make mistakes, we disagree sometimes, even on important subjects, we agree on one big, huge thing, and that is the importance of science and reasoning and reason in our world, and that it's worth fighting for. We are all on the same side, I think, in the biggest fight of our civilization right now, which is the fight for enlightenment and science and reason over you know, emotions and hatred and partisanship and tribalism and all the things that are trying to drag us back down.
It's the candle in the dark, yeah, as Carl Sagan explained it. It is absolutely that.
Absolutely. Everyone. So this is to really to everyone who is standing up for that candle in the darkness.
Here, here.
Yeah. All right.
Here.
Now, we talk about the skeptical jackass up here. I'm going to go first this time.
Speaking of the darkness.
No, we should just all say it at once. We know there's one.
I know. Well, I'm going first. RFK Jr. I have to say, come on. I have to be the one to say it. He is the skeptical jackass of the year.
Yeah.
He embodies everything that we warn against. He is a crank. He is a pseudoscientist. He's a conspiracy theorist. And he is tireless at promoting this nonsense. I think because the guy has a massive ego, he has absolutely no humility. He's not a scientist. He's not a doctor. He's not a clinician. He's not a topic expertise. He thinks he knows better than everybody freaking else. And he was also willing to sell out any of his principles so he can get into a position to promote his pseudoscience.
And by the way, Steve, everything you just said describes Trump. Everything.
I agree with that, Bob. As we said, that, you know, that's but RFK Jr. is, as David Gorski said, David Gorski, who runs science-based medicine, again, one of these warriors just quietly, you know, just working every day. The guy's father died this week.
Yeah, sure.
And he's like, Steve, I'm not sure I can get a post out on Monday. I'm like, David, take off as long as you need. He's like worried about getting a post out. He's been just in the ICU holding his father's hands for a week. And then he passed away. He's just such a tireless warrior. And he wrote about RFK that he is an extinction level event for science-based medicine in the United States at the federal level. Absolutely true. I hate to sound like an alarmist, you know, but you know that's sort of the trolling thing that puts us into this no-win scenario where things are so extreme. If you accurately describe them, you sound like you're an alarmist.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, but that's actually really true. Like the worst possible person I literally can imagine in the world might be put in charge of healthcare of the United States. It's crazy.
That's the scary part, right? Yeah. Is that he existed before this year and he actually did a lot of damage before this year.
Absolutely.
Yep. Now he's weaponized.
Track record.
Yeah, definitely, but this is the year that Trump, who you can't separate the two of them.
Yeah, of course.
No, is correct. Working to embolden and empower RFK to be unleashed on all of us.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's so scary. I don't, you know, it can't be Trump every year, so it has to be RFK this year. Yeah. But like, there is no RFK at this level without Trump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's the scary part.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. He had like a pretty impactful career early on where he actually did some good.
Yeah, he was so an environmental lawyer.
Under that.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Initially, if he just kept up with that, that would have been fine.
Yeah, stick with your wheelhouse.
He just is such an ideologue. I just wrote about him today on science-based medicine because of it was that TikTok video that we reviewed a couple of weeks ago where he's like, what's the cause of the obesity epidemic? It's poison in our food. No, it isn't poison in our food. It's not GMOs. He thinks it's GMOs. He just says things that are demonstrably scientifically wrong. He doesn't care about the facts and the science. He has a narrative and he is tripling down on that narrative, and that's all that matters. Everything's a toxin. Everything. Mm. Everything's a conspiracy. It's just like, but there's the evidence. He doesn't care. It's just utter nonsense. It's so infuriating that anybody would look at him and think that he is anything other than the absolute crank that he is.
Well, and that's, I think, the scariest part with men like RFK, possibly to some extent like Trump, definitely like Elon. You know, they're my trifecta of the skeptical jackasses of the
year. Oh, yeah.
The three-headed snake is that there is something in at least Musk and RFK that felt moral and that felt just early on.
Mm-hmm.
That built them a very large following. And then that decline and that shift into this authoritarian and, I don't know, this movement away from environmental values, because really both of them, that's what people thought they had.
One of the things I really liked about Musk was that he was like all in on solving global warming. He was going to use his billions to build electric cars and build batteries, you know what I mean? Build solar panels and for, you know, specifically for global warming. Now he's like, maybe it's not going to be that bad. Maybe people are are being overly worried about global warming. Really? So you compromised like the one thing I really admired about
yeah,
you. Yeah,
and I mean, with him, he did start to show those kind of megalomaniacal tendencies early on. I'm nervous about RFK because I think that's probably coming down the pipe.
I think it comes down to what we said. I think all three of those men have a fatal lack of humility, absolute lack of humility. And that is a massive problem. It's a massive problem.
Absolutely. A feeling like you know what is best for humanity based on your experience and perspective of the world.
And gut.
With no interest in making that more global, in broadening that perspective and asking for the opinions of other people from other places.
Or patience for a process. It's all
so
about the process.
Frightening.
Yeah.
It's so frightening.
All right. I mean, I don't. Does anybody else have any honorable mentions? Or I think that pretty much.
No, I think that was pretty much it. Yeah. we can look at what people said.
Who else did they have?
I mean, it really is basically the three people that we said. Let me see if I can even find anybody.
Any honorable mentions for
says I don't know.
IDK.
Yeah, it's like pretty much like any cabinet picks also is included into that. Marjorie Taylor Greene got a shout out, so there's one for her. She's just silly at this point. It's just really, it's like it's RFK all the way down and Elon and Trump. So,
Okay.
Mike Tyson apparently got a, I don't know what he
Mike
did.
Mike Tyson?
I mean, he fought
oh, it's 'cause he
Jake
threw
Paul.
The fight.
I guess that's, whatever.
Why?
He did kind of throw, record, but whatever.
He cashed out basically in the second.
Whatever.
Round. That's a whole other.
Get the
story.
Money. Whatever. So that's
honorable mention.
That Kennedy fella.
That Kennedy
but
fella.
That Kennedy
pretty funny.
Fella.
All right, let's move on to In Memoriam. This is just to, to remember and recognize some of the people that we care about that we lost throughout the year. There was really one prominent skeptic who died this year. Sorry, if I'm missing anybody, please email us and we'll add them in later. But, we talked about Mark Edward, a friend of ours who, again, was a good, activist, skeptic, magician, author, did a lot of work, to promote science and critical thinking. And we did lose him this year, unfortunately. Mark was a good guy. There are some non-scientists that I want to mention that had a prominent role just culturally. James Earl Jones. The voice of Darth Vader.
Darth Vader died.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Oh. Terry Garr.
Yeah.
So if you were on Star Trek or Star Wars, you're going to get mentioned if you die. and Maggie Smith. So this is the trifecta. She was in
Maggie Smith.
Harry Potter. No, she was a great actress. Loved her character. But she was amazing.
Yeah. My gosh. Her career was immense.
Phil Donahue. I want to mention, because we mentioned culturally important people from a skeptical point of view as well as, science fiction. Phil Donahue really began the descent of daytime television into the death spiral of infotainment, I don't know that he was literally the first, but he was, I think, the most important, person in the 1980s.
It was huge, yeah.
Had a huge impact on the direction of media. And he was, of course, eclipsed by later, even worse examples.
Yeah, I suppose there would be no Jerry Springer if
Jerry
it wasn't
Springer,
Phil Donahue or Morton Downey Jr.
Remember Morton Downey Jr.?
Oh, my God, Morton Downey.
Remember that?
Or would it have happened anyway?
Yeah, hard to know.
It's hard to know. Yeah.
But Donahue was a trailblazer in the medium.
There's always going to be a first.
But again, that's like saying, the science would have been discovered anyway, but we're still going to recognize the person who actually made the discovery,
Maury Povich, too.
You guys remember Ruth Westheimer?
Yeah.
Dr. Ruth.
Dr. Ruth. So she was,
I met her once.
Oh, really?
96.
Wasn't she like a sex therapist?
She was a sex therapist.
Yes.
So she was an early science communicator,
Absolutely.
Somebody communicating in her area of expertise and making it acceptable to talk
and
about
taboo.
Sex therapy on television. On just
even more taboo than it still is in this
definitely
country.
Definitely trailblazing there. No doubt about it.
Do you guys know who George Joseph Kresge Jr. was?
No.
Goes by a stage name. Give you a hint.
George Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt?
Nope. Kresge went as the amazing Kreskin.
Oh.
Whoa.
Oh, yes.
He was a mentalist. I saw him I saw him his act live. And he was one of the mentalists that pretended to be actually psychic.
Right.
Which I did not like about his style. But he was probably the most famous of that crop of skeptic. You know, really had a little bit before, I think, our time, but, you know, but he was huge. Absolutely.
What was his
huge.
Age, Steve? How old?
He was really old.
he had to be well into his 90s.
Yeah, I think he was in his 90s.
Oh, wow.
And then some scientists that I'd love to like to mention. So do you guys know who Peter Higgs?
Yeah, Higgs boson, yep. baby.
Higgs boson, Nobel-winning physicist. Yeah, famously predicted the Higgs boson.
The God particle, if you will.
If you will.
The goddamn particle.
Goddamn particle.
Yeah. The godless particle.
It's goddamn elusive, that's why.
A few other ones that caught my attention that I want to mention. You guys could add anybody if you have anyone on your own list. Ed Stone. Ed Stone, anyone? Director of Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
William Anders. This is really obscure. If anybody knows this,
Anders.
William Anders. He's an astronaut. Took perhaps the most famous photograph of any astronaut.
Of the Earth
from the moon?
Earthrise. He took the quote unquote Earthrise photo. Yeah.
Wow.
That really became central to NASA's promoting like the whole Apollo moon mission. This is before Apollo 11, you know.
Yeah, but Steve, how come there's no stars or sun in that photo?
Yeah, get me started.
Get me started.
Philip Zimbardo.
Oh.
Nope, don't know that.
Ran the Stanford Prison Experiment, which is iconic psychological experiment.
Oh, geez. Mm-hmm.
Maxine Singer, geneticist who shaped the rules for genetic engineering. Warren Washington, climate scientist who was like the real trailblazer in making climate models, like predicting the future of climate through climate modeling. He was also one of the first African-American climate scientists, so he's a trailblazer in that respect as well. Mm-hmm. So those are the ones that caught my eye. I don't know if there's any of you guys have any on your list other than that to mention, of it, or if this was even on the list of people of information for our listeners to give, Ian.
I got a few here. You mentioned Star Wars, Steve. So I'm a little surprised you missed. I mean, not Star Wars proper, but Carl Weathers.
Oh yeah, Carl Weathers.
Oh my God,
Carl Weathers. We lost him. That hurt. Donald Sutherland.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony Todd, Klingon and zombie fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony Todd is great. And horror.
Movie genre.
Candyman. So
don't say it three times.
Oh, God, that movie scared me. I still can't think of it, really.
All right, guys, you know what time it is?
Yes, let's do it.
It's about 9:30.
Let's go on with our final science or fiction of the year.
It's time for science or fiction.
Each week, I come up with three science news items or facts, two real and one fake, and then I challenge my panel of skeptics to tell me which one is the fake. Before we get to the final science or fiction of the year, we're going to go over some science or fiction stats. So Cody Wolf was kind enough to send us in the science or fiction stats for the year. And here they are. We're going to go right to just the Rogue's record. So at the bottom of the list was Jay at 55% correct.
Now, if 55% is the floor, that's pretty darn good.
That's pretty good. I am taking it too easy on you guys, is what that means.
I think that's
the crap.
I think that's your takeaway here.
Or maybe we've gotten better.
Well, I have to get harder as you get better. That's what I'm saying.
Or you have to increase it to 1 out of 4.
Maybe. That's more work for me now, so probably not.
Yeah, probably not.
Next is Bob at 59.57%. So we could round that up to 60% for Bob.
Yeah, you better round that up.
That's a D minus, Bob. Well done.
And then Evan at 63%.
Oh my gosh. I don't know what
And
to
then
say.
Kara, I think you had your best
D-minus
year ever.
As well.
76% for Kara.
Oh, Kara. Kara has unlocked this game.
Yeah, you did so well this year. Kara was ridiculous.
It was uncanny.
You have the cheat codes.
Mind melding.
The number of times you were right for the wrong reason, you're like, I don't know. I don't know. I want three. Yeah, you know, and you're like,
the second one.
Why did you pick
it? Your instincts are so good. It's crazy.
The one with the dinosaur fiction.
I haven't cracked you yet, Kara. I've cracked Bob. Bob's easy. Because if it's surprising to me, it'll be surprising to Bob.
Well,
I do have that advantage, right, of being the person who has spent the least amount of time with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, you don't have.
Yep. He's cracked me, you bastard. Mm-hmm. I should just Costanza it. That's what I got to do at this point.
I want to compare our records to previous records, see if we're getting better, worse, if it kind of ebbs and flows.
It sounds like we're
This is
all
definitely
rising.
The best year. Yeah, you guys ever did. Yeah. Okay. So solo wins. Steve. Kara had 3 solo wins. Evan, you had 1 solo win.
Yes.
And Andrea and George each had 1 solo win.
Oh, that's awesome.
Year. Yeah.
Nice. Oh, their records are probably way better than ours.
Yeah, but
Andrea's
they're
probably 100% or something. Well,
they only won a few times. I've had 3 sweeps. Swept you guys 3 times. You guys have swept me 8 times. So you guys have swept me more than I have swept you. Okay, but we have 1 more to add to the statistics.
Oh, boy.
Why do you
think? Kara has the most to lose, statistically speaking.
She complains and then she gets it right. She'll
going to drop to 73% if you get this wrong.
The theme is the science news of 2024. But these are not items that I've done previously. These are just 3 items that we never talked about this year.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Ian, have you played this your first one for this year?
Yeah, because I'm usually only on once a year. So.
And I had I have 0 out of 0 because I didn't skip I didn't skip any weeks this year.
That's right.
We'll have to fix that for 2025. Get young.
And you guys should at least do like 1 guest science fiction a year. Yeah.
We used to do that with the live shows.
Yeah, maybe we'll do the live
shows. We do that. Yeah.
All right.
We'll revisit that.
All right. We'll think about that for next year. All right. Here they are. Item number 1. Scientists have discovered the first eukaryote that can directly fix nitrogen from the air with an organelle called a nitroplast. Item number 2. A study found a significantly increased risk of developing Alzheimer's disease among taxi and ambulance drivers, providing a possible clue to an important risk factor associated with driving. And item number 3, despite the fact that the surrounding stones of Stonehenge came from Wales, researchers found that the 6 metric ton central altar stone came from Scotland, at least 750 kilometers away. Mm. We are going to do reverse order. So, Kara, you're going to go first.
Ha!
Okay, got to get through these. So, first eukaryote that can directly fix nitrogen from the air with an organelle called a nitroplast. I think the way that reads implies that prokaryotes have already been doing this. And if prokaryotes can do it, a eukaryote could do it because a eukaryote could have endosymbiosis. So, yeah, I could see there being 1 organism out there that engulfed a prokaryote at some point and incorporated that. That doesn't bother me. A significantly increased risk of developing Alzheimer's among taxi and ambulance drivers, a possible clue to an important risk factor associated with driving. I don't get that one at all. What would driving? If anything, it should be like protective. People who are mapping the city all the time with their minds, or I don't know, or people who are just working older and, you know, then you have that, the opposite of what's it called? What's the bias called? The attrition bias, like the death bias?
Survivor bias?
Yeah, survivor. God, why couldn't I come up with that word? That's disconcerting. I said I was tired.
It's been a long year, Kurt.
Yeah, it's been a very long year. And despite the fact that the surrounding stones of Stonehenge came from Wales, they found that the central altar stone came from Scotland. Eh, I buy it. I don't know. There's a lot of cool old stuff happening then in that part of the world. Maybe it had special significance. Maybe it was important to bring. I mean, it wasn't just like a random stone, right? It was the central altar stone. So yeah, that one seems more reasonable. The Alzheimer's one, I do not get. Why would driving, unless it was like they think it's because of smog or something, but everybody drives. I bet you there are commuters that drive just as much as ambulance drivers. So yeah, I'm gonna call BS. That one feels like the fiction.
Okay, Evan.
I agree. As soon as I heard this one, I have no idea. Why would there be an association between Alzheimer's disease and driving at all? I don't claim to know anything about this disease or neurology, but it just does not make any sense to me. Whereas, as Kara said, the other 2 have some features each in them that, you know, seem unusual but reasonable, whereas this Alzheimer's one is totally unreasonable. I have to go with Kara and say that's fiction.
Okay, Bob.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with these guys. The eukaryote fixing nitrogen, that's just too cool to be false. And let's see. The Stonehenge one, yeah, I mean, 750 kilometers, that's far, but it just, you know, it just doesn't seem to be as unbelievable as this Alzheimer's one. So I'll just join the crew and say that that's fiction as well.
Okay, Jay.
All right, I'm gonna take the first one because nobody picked it.
Ooh.
Oh. What?
The Nitroplast really? One?
Contrarian. Yes.
All righty.
Putting your needle down.
And Ian.
Well, the first one, I recognize that they're phonemes all put together in a unique order. I have no idea what any of that means. So thankfully, I listened to what all you said. And I was like, okay, cool. That seems science-y. The second one, I was... Didn't Steve say something about Alzheimer's? Is like if you're touching brain matter, you took a transfer.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
So I was
or
like,
consuming it.
What are they doing in that while they're driving? What are they snacking on?
human jerk.
But it does, after hearing, you know, is it because of the driving? That does seem weird. And then despite the fact that the whole Stonehenge thing, it's like, really? You're not just going to take a stone from where you got it? You got to go somewhere else and get a whole nother stone. Seems like a lot of work. But I guess there's not much to do back in the day, so why not take a trip to Scotland? Or just Wales for the other stones and then just Scotland for that one. I guess the driving one makes the least amount of sense. Like, is that a good brain training activity? Maybe we don't have to sign up for one of those websites. You just drive around a city all day. So I'll say that's fiction.
Okay. So you all agree with the third one. So we'll start there. Despite the fact that surrounding stones of Stonehenge came from Wales, researchers found that the 6 metric ton central altar stone came from Scotland, at least 750 kilometers away. You guys all think this one is science. And this one is science. This is science. So, yeah, it came from the Orcadian Basin in Scotland all the way to southern England where Stonehenge is. Yeah, like that, dragging a 6 metric ton stone 750 kilometers thousands of years ago was no...
They didn't have nice local stones
or why
something?
Couldn't they find
like,
something
you know, artisanal
closer.
Stones artisanal in that area? Stone. Like what?
So the researchers, they were able to match like the grain of the stone to that specific quarry or location. And then they also examined other possible sources of that same type of stone and found that they didn't match. So they didn't just test their hypothesis. They actually tried to disprove it, which is good. They looked at other things. And so, yeah, that's, you know, again, nothing's 100%, but that matches best with the location in Scotland. They also think that the, you know, Stonehenge wasn't built all at once. This was probably a later revision of Stonehenge, right? Mm-hmm. So the same people who dragged in the blue stone from Wales were not the same people who got this stone from Scotland. Does that make sense? This was sort of later. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, let's put a big thing in here. Get this mystic stone from Scotland or whatever reason they thought that stone was special enough to drag 750 kilometers. they did it.
I want to know the people who organized the party to be like, let's go get a stone, guys. Yeah. Like, why?
Oh, I saw this really pretty stone. It's a little far away.
Yeah. It's pretty heavy.
Just keep going.
You we'll got this.
It's okay. We have oxen and slaves to drive it around.
They probably did a lot of the, made up a lot of the distance at sea, though. They probably transported a big chunk of it by sea. But still, it's a lot of land you got to cross, you know, at either end.
That thing floats.
But the exact methods are not known that they use. So clearly... Aliens did it, yeah.
Piloted by Bigfoot.
Piloted
Thank
by
you,
Bigfoot, yeah. All right, we'll go backwards. A study found a significantly increased risk of developing Alzheimer's disease among taxi and ambulance drivers, providing a possible clue to an important risk factor associated with driving. Bob, Kara, Evan, and Ian think this one is the fiction. Jay, you think this one is science. Mm-hmm. So interestingly, right, it's just a risk factor associated with driving. It doesn't have to be driving itself.
That's why I said maybe pollution. But
it could be, or it might be something even less direct. Just if could be sitting for all that time. It could be other behaviors that they engage in because they're driving that many hours. You know, basically for their
eating
job.
Brain, I'm telling you,
it could be the brain chips that they get. So this one is the fiction. Because Kara is exactly right. It was protective, and they think it's because of all the spatial reasoning they have to do.
Uh-huh. That's awesome.
It is a brain game that they're playing every day. And then, again, we don't know for sure, but they did it. Like, they looked
Where did they do the study? Do you know? Was it like global or?
I do know.
I ask because every time I've been in New York, the taxi drivers and, you know, pre-Uber, whatever, things got weird with Uber. But when when I moved to New York and I lived there, the taxi drivers blew my mind with how they knew how to get everywhere. But when I moved to L.A., I ordered a taxi to the airport and the taxi driver had to put it in his GPS because he didn't know how to get to the airport. And this was disconcerting to me.
Yeah. Mm.
This was worrisome, to say the least.
So this was done by researchers at Mass General in Boston. They looked at 443 professions.
Oh, wow.
And these were the two that popped out as having a protective effect.
Interesting. Yeah.
So what if you play a racing game or, I guess, a taxi driving game?
Simulator? Taxi simulator?
Would that work?
If you did it every day for eight
every
hours.
Every day, 8 hours a day. Well, streamer. Some streamer probably. Yeah, right.
True, but if you think about it, most driving games are more about the skill in like dodging obstacles or That's going true. Really fast than they are in going to a place over and over and learning where
That's
it
fair.
Is.
Except for Crazy Taxi.
I wonder of the Crazy Taxi. Of the 443 professions I looked at, was podcaster among them? I'll have to dig into the data a little bit.
Well,
this means that scientists have discovered the first eukaryote that directly fixed nitrogen from the air with an organelle called the nitroplast is science, because again, Kara is correct. That nitroplast is an endosymbiont prokaryote. And the study was basically asking the question, and they knew this, but the if it's a symbiont, then the eukaryote doesn't get credit for it, right? It's just in a symbiotic relationship with a prokaryote that's doing it. But if it's a organelle, the eukaryote does get credit for it. So the question was, has this prokaryotic symbiont co-evolved enough with its its symbiont, which was a marine algae, that it's now considered one organism? And they said, yes, it's one organism. That is an organelle, not a symbiont. It is, and they called it a nitroplast, making that algae the first eukaryote to be able to fix nitrogen directly from the air.
This was huge, and I assume nobody remembered that I actually talked about – I did a news item. This is my news item in May.
As I was doing my research, this did ring familiar.
I'm glad one person remembered.
Yeah. No, it was cool. That was a cool item.
Absolutely.
So
good job, Bob.
We'll adjust those stats. I'm not going to do the math right now, but good job, everyone.
I'm hoping it got me right to 60.
There you go.
I was damn close.
Evan, give us a quote.
For last year's words belong to last year's language, and next year's words await another voice. And to make an end is to make a beginning. T.S. Eliot, poet.
Very poetic.
Very poetic.
Appropriately so.
Yeah, for the end of the year. It's not exactly science related, but that's okay. It's my way of wishing everyone a good end of the year and a happy holidays. And we're so looking forward to 2025. I hope it gets better.
I tend to prefer even numbered years over odd numbered years, but I make an exception for years ending with five. They're okay because they're divisible into 10.
Right,
so 2025 is quarter of a century. Quarter of the 20th century is gone. Depending on how
it's
you
so
count.
Weird.
Oh my gosh! Stop! No,
it is weird, right? 2025 is like it's the future. It's like it's crazy.
We're living in the '20s.
I know.
A little bit more dystopian than I hope.
Yeah, when you think about 20 years ago, like we're in 2025, we will celebrate completing our 20th year. Again, this is our 20th year-end review. Right. And think about when we started. And then imagining the future we imagine. Like if we, I would love to go back and interview ourselves from 2005 about what we thought 2025 would be like. And I bet you we would get it horribly wrong.
Oh, yeah. We would sound like idiots.
Yeah.
Like absolute idiots.
Yeah. I think me back then would be so much more positive about what reality actually is.
Mm-hmm. Like the social media thing is going to be awesome.
That's right.
Nanotech everywhere.
We can all be driving hydrogen fuel cell cars.
Maybe there'll be an iPhone someday. Yeah.
I was 1 year out of undergrad in 2005.
Wow.
I was a completely different person.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I wonder what we would have said. Like, do you think you'll still be podcasting in 20 years? I don't know what I would have said back then. Because we didn't know what... Podcasting was going to do.
Survive. Yeah. Right. The whole medium was just so new.
I probably would have said something along the lines of, I know I'll be still promoting skepticism. I don't know what form that will be taking.
Right.
And that's
I'll
true.
I'll be a TikTok star.
Yes.
And I think we can say that with some confidence because for 10 years prior to that, we had been running the local organization. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, we had some a little bit of momentum behind us in that regard. So you're right, Steve. We would be doing something if not a podcast. Yeah. We'd still
but I also be doing think something. That I also think that if someone told us that all you guys are still going to be doing this in 2025, I think we would all conclude that, oh, then we must be rich. Oh, boy, we got that wrong.
I'm a quadrillionaire.
But it has been an awesome ride. Like, I mean,
yeah.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I love working with all you guys. This is always so like glad. One of my favorite things to do all week. I always look forward to
what
it.
What an adventure.
It's a lot of fun. So glad. It's been a massive adventure. We've met a ton of awesome people.
Oh, God.
That's true.
You know,
I'm
Carrie,
privileged.
You're right at the top. Of the people we've met, you are at the top of that
Absolutely.
List. In all sincerity, it's been such a great honor to work with you in this capacity. You have to know this.
You know what one of the perks is of being the person who kind of came halfway through the journey?
What is it?
That I get to get that kind of flattery all the time. I get to be both somebody you met along the way and a core part of the team, which is really cool.
True. Yeah.
Thank you for that. That's so kind.
That's true, because I already knew Evan before the whole skeptical thing.
Exactly.
No, it's true, though. It's true.
But Ian, we count you on that too. I mean, I remember when Jay, seriously, I know Ian's the humble guy, there's not like any attention paid to him, blah, blah, blah.
Here's
but
his picture.
It was like, oh, damn, we need a programmer to help us like tweak the website or whatever. And Jay's like, oh, there's this guy who, like, he lives in Connecticut.
He's emailing me.
Like, he lives in Connecticut, and he, you know, it's like, oh, he's in Connecticut. Oh, good enough. He's close.
Yeah, that's right. He's hired.
That's
good. Do you want to know his name? Nope.
Does he know Microsoft Word? Yeah, who cares?
Ian knocked on my door one day. You know what I mean? Like, that was it. Hey, what's up, man?
But what a find. Yeah, seriously, you have been such a huge boon to everything that we do. I mean, you have a massive skill set. And just been, it's been fantastic working with you. So that was just really, really lucky on our part that we were able
to
bring you into our circle.
Ian, I don't know if you would say this about me, but I'll say this about you.
Oh, Lord.
Good start.
In all the years that we've been working together, you and I have not had 1 second of tension or stress between us.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Right?
Because Ian's chill.
I get that enough with family. Why am I going to do it, Ian?
I know, but it's pretty remarkable because, like, you and I work very well together. We have, I think, our personalities, like, you know, we just don't have any conflict. Like, it's just happy, fun, interesting. You know, we're very goal-oriented, and you're just one of the few people in my life that is zero stress.
Yeah, but where are those 4080s, Jay, that you said you were going to order?
I know. The goddamn
graphics cards.
We're still recording, guys.
I'm sorry. Oh, anyway. Well, if you want to see this camaraderie live, where could you see it in the 21st year of our SGU? At the Nauticon?
The Nauticon is the
Nauticon 2025.
It's the next May thing 15th, that's happening.
16th and 17th. Baby.
That's right. May in glorious White Plains, New York.
But that is our official – that really is our official 20-year celebration. I'm sure we're going to roll that into the entire weekend theme.
And something interesting is going to happen for the SGU in 2025, which we cannot talk about at the moment. At some point soon, we'll be able to talk about it. But it'll be good and interesting. So stay tuned. You know, we always like to just – look back, not just look back at the SGU of the previous year, but think going forward, do we want to do anything different? We want to mix things up, you know. There's this guy Scrappy-Doo I thought we should bring on the show.
or Oliver.
Oliver, yeah.
Brady
Bunch, baby.
That worked well.
We're going to do this special where Kara water skis over a shark cage.
Oh, my God.
Jump the shark.
Somebody said we jumped the shark about 12 years ago. Remember that, guys?
15 years ago. Screw that.
The same person who doesn't like puns.
Hey,
or massages or chocolate.
or Olive Garden.
But seriously, it is a good time. It's a good milestone where you say, all right, is there anything we want to do differently to shake things up, or what's working? Maybe what could be improved? Send us your feedback because this is a good time. You know, we want to delete any segments, add any segments. We are still pursuing the SGU correspondent idea. We did get some great submissions. We're a lot. We're just collating them at this point in time. We want to give people enough time to send them in, but hopefully we will start incorporating that in 2025. All right. Thanks again, guys, for a wonderful year and continuing to go on this little adventure with me. It's been a blast. Looking forward to another year of science and skepticism. Thanks to every one of our listeners out there, everyone who's ever come to a live show to see us, everyone who supports us as a patron. Thank you so much to the patron. You guys really, really make all this possible. Honestly, we don't tell you enough how much we appreciate your support. And thank you guys for joining me again this week.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks,
Steve. Pleasure.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays.
Happy New Year.
Happy Krampus. Krampus, right.
Happy Festivus, all that stuff.
Saturnalia, you know.
And until next week and next year.
I knew that was
good. This is your Skeptic's Guide to the Universe.
Skeptic's Guide to the Universe is produced by SGU Productions, dedicated to promoting science and critical thinking. For more information, visit us at theskepticsguide.org. Send your questions to info@theskepticsguide.org. And if you would like to support the show and all the work that we do, go to patreon.com/skepticsguide and consider becoming a patron and becoming part of the SGU community. Our listeners and supporters are what make SGU possible.